All right. Well, hey, welcome to Andy and John Talk Telecom. I am Andy Netzel.
I'm John Rewey.
And with us today, we have Mike Odell of Comcast. Mike's been on the podcast before. Welcome back, Mike.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
You've got mail. This is Andy and John Talk Telecom with Andy Netzel and John Rewey.
But yeah, Mike, welcome. Welcome to the show. Welcome to another bourbon and broadband. I think we're all armed with our, I don't know if it's our favorite bourbons, but it's a bourbon. So I got a, howdy going. What do y'all got?
So I have a Buffalo Trace that I picked up last time I was in the Bourbon Trail. So I've been saving this, that this is nicely aged for a special occasion just such as this one.
Oh, what an honor.
So great. So honored. I got this nice little bottle of Knob Creek for Christmas, and I thought this was an apt time to break it open. And cheers, gentlemen.
Cheers.
Cheers. You're right, John. No, might as well break it open. No time like the present. So yeah, let's talk about some telecom.
Well, let me tell you a quick Knob Creek story, though. So last fall, my niece got married in Nashville, Tennessee, and asked me to officiate the ceremony, which I was happy to do. Happy anniversary, Josh and Hannah, by the way. On our way down, my brother and I decided to meander through the Bourbon Trail on our way from Ohio to Tennessee, and had an occasion to visit more than one distillery, and we got to bottle our own Knob Creeks. And it was cool to watch them pop it open and pour it out through the filtering. And then we got to bottle it and put our little thumbprint on the wax. So I have a very special bottle of Knob Creek waiting for something. I just don't know what yet.
Well, yeah, that sounds like fun.
It was a good time.
Was that your favorite of the distilleries?
It was probably the most interesting tour that we took, because they make a lot of different bourbons there. Getting to tour the aging houses was fantastic, and look at some of the old barrels that were in there. Jim Beam was actually a really good tour. Four Roses was good. Angel's Envy in Louisville was good. There's some other good ones, but yeah, it's not time wasted, that's for sure.
That Jim Beam facility was just staggering in how it just goes on and on forever.
Yeah. Aging houses. Yeah, it's pretty cool. So, yeah, okay. Sorry. On with the broadband.
We covered the right. It's bourbon and broadband, so we've got the bourbon cup.
We haven't had a bourbon and broadband in a while, so I'm really glad we finally got another one back on the schedule.
Yeah, we need to make this a regular occurrence, John. Let's mark that down. But
we'll continue on to the quarterly format. I mean, I think it might actually be ideal.
It might be. I agree.
Well, feel free to invite me anytime, or I can just watch the episodes online and enjoy a bourbon along with you.
Won't stop you from doing that.
Yeah. And it's been too long since we had you on. I mean, it was. We actually went and looked it up. It was October of 2021 last time you were here. So
wow,
we've really got to do a better job of making this a little more regular.
It doesn't feel like that. Like if you would have asked me to guess, I would have said, oh, I don't know, maybe like a year and a half ago. I would not have guessed over 2 years ago.
It's been a hot minute.
It has been. So what's going on in your world, Mike? You've had you're still Comcast. I think you had a job change, though. You were the head of network maintenance, network ops, maintenance ops.
Yeah, I was my previous role was a director of network maintenance for Comcast at headquarters. I am now a distinguished engineer. You wouldn't know it by looking at me, but I'm the least distinguished engineer at Comcast. So a little bit of a role change, but it's all good. A lot of the same stuff. Just a slightly different direction, I guess. So,
as a distinguished engineer, as opposed to director of network ops.
So it's really one of sort of the differences in like the engineering leadership tracks versus operations leadership tracks. So I still work in operations, but you know, in the traditional operations structure, you have, you know, supervisor, manager, director, VP, SVP, that type of pyramid. And so for me, you know, thinking about what I love to do with technology and teaching, VP didn't really make sense for me. So it was really one of just moving into an engineering track where, you know, you eng one through engineering fellow, senior fellow, without any direct reports, because I don't have any employees directly. So, you know, it just allowed me to take a different path in my career that didn't rely on sort of the availability of the pyramid. And to continue to stay connected to the technology, maybe more so than the business side of the business, if that makes sense. Because you know, I still love the technology side, and you know, the advancement of the industry, and training and writing and, you know, presenting at Expo and those kind of things, which, you know, is more of an engineering role anyway. So it just made sense to kind of switch tracks for me, and you know, hopefully for Comcast.
Well, technology is the part that I like, you know, the most, and I'm kind of excited to hear what you've been working on lately, and kind of you know, what's been keeping you busy in that role.
Well, you know, if you hadn't heard, there's some stuff going on in the cable industry, and you know, this DOCSIS 4 thing, which was probably still, you know, vaporware when we talked last time. I can't believe it's been that long. You know, real.
I've had a baby since then. I'm a little boy now.
Wow.
We were talking about DOCSIS 4.0, like, oh, this is the next thing on the horizon. Maybe eventually, you know, I think back then 5G was even still like we're just rolling this out.
Right.
It moves fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now it's here, right? It's Colorado Springs and then Atlanta, and now closer to your area, Philadelphia. Well, I guess
that's right,
a whole state away, but you're right, it's here, right?
That's right. Yeah, it's amazing to think about, you know, DOCSIS technology and what it's going to enable us to do, whether it be extended spectrum, you know, frequency division diplexed or full duplex or some combination, you know, of the two. I think with some of the news that's come out of, you know, Broadcom and MaxLinear this year, you know, about the direction of their chips and software on a chip and, you know, some of the potential that exists there, you know, to do multi-symmetrical gigabit over coax. And I'm sorry, I can't say that without giggling, literally. Because, yeah, no, I never did. And, you know, I'll tell you a funny story that's SET related. I remember I was still a network maintenance manager back in the Keystone market in Pittsburgh. And an engineer friend of mine came back from an SET technical training session. This was years and years ago, and said, there's this really cool thing I saw at the Penn Ohio training that we're going to do 4096 QAM in the downstream. And I said, yeah, okay, whatever. Like, I don't know what those guys were smoking in there, but like we're barely doing 256 QAM over, you know, analog optics. And he's talking about doing 4096 QAM. This was, you know, 10, 15 years ago. Right. Mm-hmm. And well, guess what? Now we're doing 4096 QAM OFDM on the downstream, and some cases, you know, 2048 or 4096 4K on the upstream and OFDMA, and seeing multi-symmetrical or multi-gig symmetrical over coax. And that's the thing that I love about SCT is, you know, they're so far out in front that it's almost unbelievable, right? When you hear about some of these new things like, you know, 4K on the downstream. Yeah, okay, sure. Well, yeah.
I mean, back when 4.0 and multi-gig symmetrical, you know, FDX, these terms just got thrown around, and it was like, man, we've thought multiple times that coax might have reached the end of its life, and then here we are trying to squeeze more out of it. Are they really going to be able to pull this off? And you know, the answer, you know, to your point is, here we are, and it's actually happening, and it's kind of staggering.
Yeah, Scott, what I remember that day.
wireless over DOCSIS 4.0 powered access points, you know, for mobile. I mean, wow.
John, you mentioned, you know, squeezing more and more out of coax, and that's kind of the way we've looked at it, you know, squeezing more and more. And is it, you know, Mike, do you think are we near the end of that squeeze, or, you know, are we done squeezing? We're more like, we need to, you know, envision it. We're opening it up. Like there's more, you know, you've imagine squeezing, like, okay, you're getting to the end, but a time and time again, it was like Ben against Tom Brady, you know, towards the end of his career. Like, okay, well, this is the year he falls off because he's old, and okay, well, he won. Okay, this is the year he falls off because it's like that with coax. Like, okay, this is the time. This is the most it. And again and again, we find we can get more out of it. So are we nearing that end, or should we just completely forget about that and imagine it just being like an open funnel? And there's more out there.
You know, I have to imagine that there's more out there, right? And the Tom Brady thing is funny because, one, I'm an Ohio State guy, but two, you know, it's, as a Cleveland Browns fan, we bet against Tom Brady for a long time, and then they're like, yeah, they traded him to Tampa Bay, his career's finally over. And I've learned not to bet against Tom Brady, one, and two, I think your point about the cable industry is kind of a good one. In that, you know, people have been saying that cable is dead for a decade, maybe longer, I don't know. And that, you know, you can, if you want lightning fast service, you have to have a fiber-based product. And no offense to the fiber-based products, obviously, because we provide them as well. I think PON is perfectly valuable, and, you know, we're leveraging a lot in some of our, you know, rural broadband as a greenfield opportunity to, you know, bring broadband and real broadband to, you know, some remote or underserved communities. So what I've come to the conclusion is, Andy, is that coax is not dead, one, for sure. What the future of coax looks like, I have no idea, because, you know, we continue to develop through the ecosystem that is Cable Labs and the industry to find new ways to leverage our currently existing assets in new ways, you know, as math and technology and, you know, silicon and all of the different technologies evolve, that we just find new ways to add life to our existing assets and provide value to our customers. So I think I've grown up enough to say never say never, and that if things that we haven't even imagined yet are possible, the scope of technology is just so steep. Who knows what a year, 2 years, 5 years from now looks like. So I will not bet against Tom Brady.
Is there, and this may be a silly question, is there a physical limitation to what can be transported or the amount that can be transported over coax? Or is it primarily dependent on the hardware on each side of the software, you know, in that hardware?
Yeah, and that's one of the, I think, under-realized facts about, you know, the medium itself is, when you consider the speed of light through a piece of optical fiber versus the speed of an electron through a piece of coaxial cable, coax is actually faster, right? It you look it up, like, you can do the math. The speed of light in a, you know, a single mode fiber is actually about 67% of the speed of light, or thereabouts, say 65 to 70%. But the velocity of propagation, which is, you know, relative to the speed of light in a vacuum for coax, in some cases is north of 90% of the speed of light, right? So it's the pipe itself is limitless in terms of, you know, the speed at which the data can flow through it. Or, well, that's not true. The speed is actually faster in coax than it is in fiber. But to your point, is it's really the electronics on the end in both the optical and the coaxial space. So as the optoelectronics in fiber, you know, we're talking about hundreds of gig optics and, you know, coherent optics and, you know, hollow core fiber and all of the amazing data rates that are happening there. It's really about the electronics on the ends. And there have been obviously some fascinating developments in fiber itself, but coax is the same way. You know, as we develop better nodes and better amplifiers and better passives and, you know, those types of things, we just continue to, you know, peel back the layers of the potential of the medium itself, which is coax. So that's the fascinating part, is the cable itself hasn't really changed in a long time. It's the things that are connected to it that's unleashed all of this possibility.
What about, you talked about training being something that's close to your heart, and then, you know, the growth of these networks, the need for people that know how to work on these networks. I think a lot of people looking to get into the, you know, technical side, operation side of things thought at some point fiber is what we need to focus on. But now I'm hearing, you know, the really high demand for really quality coax splicers. What do you see as kind of the challenge and the trends you see in terms of getting, you know, a trained workforce that can continue to service these coax networks well?
So first question, are you reading my emails? No, I suspect that you're not. But no, you're right. This is something that I'm passionate about, and it is a problem. And I think we talked about this a couple of years ago, is how do you develop that workforce? So I have a couple of things that a lot of people don't know about. In fact, hardly anybody knows about. So we'll bring them up here. The Penn Ohio chapter, we instituted something last fall that we're really proud of, is that we developed a partnership with a local technical high school outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that is actually teaching the SCT broadband premise installer course in high school. So when these kids graduate in May of 2025, they will have a broadband premise installer certification. That's so cool. They could go immediately into the workforce. It's a pilot program that we stood up in partnership with SCT National to support that particular school and that course material. And we're also looking into, you know, a community college in our area to deploy the next level of that certification, which would be like broadband distribution specialist, as well as coaxial cable construction, coaxial splicing, fiber construction, fiber splicing, so that, you know, as you know, kids that maybe graduate from high school or trade school and are looking for, you know, a career field, that will have SCT certified training available to them. And those are things that we're working on at the Penn Ohio chapter, because we are passionate about not just training the workforce that currently exists and is hired either by a business partner or an MSO, but people that haven't actually entered the workforce yet, and to promote our industry as a viable option, as a career path while they're still in high school, or in a, you know, post-secondary educational institution.
Was that something that took some convincing for the high school and the community college, or was that something that they were all on board with and also recognized, you know, a alternate, you know, maybe path for, you know, okay, not everyone's going to college, right? Hey, you know, in addition to the traditional trades that you think of, let's think about telecom too. So was that an easy sell, or did that take some convincing?
It took a little bit convincing, and I will say that we haven't deployed the college courses yet, but it is something that we're working on. And the high school did take some work too. But luckily the one of the teachers at the school that's on the educational development committee, was a friend of ours. Even though he wasn't in the telecom industry, he taught related fields already of IT and, you know, technology and computers. And so it wasn't that far off track for him, to be able with some support from National, and, you know, shout out to Joel Banks and, Paul Rodriguez for, you know, being there to put their arms around the teacher and say, you know, whatever materials you have, and us as a chapter. So we have office hours tomorrow, where, you know, every couple of weeks we have an open block of time that we reserve. So if the teacher or the students have questions about the material that we join, and, you know, we can help to answer their questions and, you know, provide material support and some expertise, you know, to both the teacher and the student. So, it's a pretty cool commitment, because that's what it is. But a commitment to the industry to help, you know, train that next generation of techs, and the community college is still a work in progress. So we're hoping to have that deployed by the time that they graduate in May of 2025, so that they have, you know, that next logical step to, you know, start that fall if they choose to. So that's the big news, or one of the big pieces of news at the Penn Ohio chapter.
And that's really cool.
That's phenomenal. Love that. That could be a really, that could be a template for a lot of other, or arrangements like that, hopefully, because I think we hear it time and again, what the need is for workforce and the need to get more people into the workforce. And I think, again, it's kind of funny too, that, you talked about computers and IT as being kind of, one of the, you know, the focus of that teacher. SCTE has classes for that too. Like, that's a very important part of our world in the cable industry as well. So it's not as, you know, distant from, you know, even if HFC network seems like a stretch from IT, it's really a lot of the same skills under the same umbrella in the cable TV market.
No, it's funny you mention that, right? Because, you know, FDX is the thing that made that probably the most apparent to me, because, you know, somebody that grew up as, you know, in a analog 330 megahertz system was my first exposure to the cable television world, to now FDX, and the long-term path for FDX is there's no linear video in that anywhere, right? So it is truly a data transport network, a bi-directional data transport network. And so, you know, the alignment between, you know, IT and, you know, other sort of data transfer technologies gets closer and closer. Mm-hmm. So it's really about providing the path, you know, for devices to transmit bits, you know, over that medium.
Yeah, for sure. What is kind of going a little more technical about it? I'm just kind of curious about this. When we talk about coax splicing and some of the actual craft work for, that's maybe seems like a more of a legacy technology, or you know, coax splicing seems like, you know, nobody really talked about that for a long time. It's all about fiber splicing. But, you know, when companies were starting to do these big high split upgrades, or starting to roll out the preparations for DOCSIS 4.0 and using actual hardline, having to upgrade the hardline and add new devices out there, the demand for coax splicers really has kind of come with that. And with it, not only do you need to be able to do that, but also do it at a really high level, because the tolerances are a lot tighter with some of this new technology. Is that accurate? And can you kind of talk about why, I guess, from a more technical standpoint, of why this is kind of important and different than maybe, you know, throwing together, you know, splicing together some hardline in an old 350 system or something?
Yeah, no, it's a great point. And it's funny you mention that, because I keep coming back to SCT. I remember when DOCSIS 4 was first announced, having a hallway conversation at SCT Expo. It was in New Orleans with Nick Segura from Charter and John Downey at the time at Cisco, about what that meant, the potential to do extended spectrum. And at the time, you know, we're talking about the big 3 gigahertz push to get all of that bandwidth. And we talked a lot about how difficult that's going to be, because when you start talking about higher frequencies, you're exactly right that the craft sensitivity or the frequency response of the core components that we think about, not just the coax itself, because that does have a shape to it, right? That's relative to frequency, but all of the other components, the taps, the connectors, you know, all of those other things, the amplifiers, you know, there's a lot to be solved for. You know, as attenuation is a function of frequency, the higher the frequency of the network in question, the greater the attenuation. Therefore, in any active scenario, the gain that's required in the amplifiers to push signals, you know, at higher amplitudes, at higher frequencies, is required. And there's a ton of risk when you have that much gain. And Deanna Linton and I have talked about this a lot from Charter CTEC Labs about, you know, the consequence of all that gain. It's a benefit, but it's also a consequence if not handled properly. And the frequency sensitivity of all of the individual components in the network, even connectors. You could take a connector out of your truck that was manufactured a decade ago and go put it on a piece of 500 cable today, and it would probably work fine, right? Until you look at the frequency response above a gigahertz, and you would see that there may be some tuning in that connector that when it was made was perfectly acceptable. You know, because the systems a decade ago were 750 megahertz and below. And so any frequency response artifacts were beyond the usable passband. And I think as we start to push the system wider and wider, we're going to find all of those legacy components that were not tuned, you know, for a proper frequency response above, you know, 1.7 gigahertz.
Probably find
them. Hey, Mike, does John sound super digitized to you? Like, okay.
He does, yeah.
That thing is happening again.
Oh, man. Brutal. Let me switch wireless or Wi-Fi providers.
This is a case for cable right here.
It kind of is. I don't throw darts at anybody, right? Because, you know, having a multitude of options as a service provider, whether it's wireline or wireless or optic or coaxial, you know, is good for the industry. It's healthy competition. It drives innovation, like all of those things. But, you know, as somebody that's made a career in HFC and cable television, obviously I think our solution is best. But, you know, no offense to any other, you know, technologies out there. But, so to just kind of finish the point, the importance of craft sensitivity in our medium is only going to increase over time. And that means from the time that it's, you know, hung, the coaxial construction to maintain the shape and the impedance and the structural integrity of the coax to the splicing, you know, and the proper components, the connectors and taps, and the craft sensitivity that is required to operate at those higher frequencies is one of those things that, you know, to your point, John, years and years ago, you know, there were coax splicers and people that knew coaxial construction, you know, everywhere. And then, you know, we started driving fiber deeper and deeper for all the right reasons. Our signal quality improved significantly as we drove that fiber deeper. The quality of the optical links from analog to digital and now Ethernet improved the quality of the signals that we could generate and provide to smaller service groups, which means capacity and, you know, customer experience and all of those things. So, you know, when people talk about cable, they kind of leave the HFC, the hybrid fiber part, out of the equation and say, oh, it's a coax network. Well, it is, but there's an awful lot of fiber out there too. And, you know, obviously we offer fiber-based services too. And those are craft sensitive as well, but the whole industry shift towards fiber meant that a lot of the folks that were in the construction and splicing industry moved to fiber because that's where the growth was. And now we're seeing, you know, a gap because, you know, the population aged and retired or focused on fiber. And so there's a need to train a younger generation of folks in the trade that is coax. And it is a specialized trade that requires skill that, you know, we're really needing to leverage some of the legends in this business that, you know, developed the technology and our RF experts like the Ron Rannicks and the Terry Bushes. And, you know, the list is endless of the legends that built this business to help, you know, facilitate the education of the next generation of folks that are going to build the networks of the future.
Oh, go ahead, John.
I had, if you can hear me, I was kind of curious. You mentioned a couple of the legends, Ron Rannick and Terry Bush. I repped Trilithic back in the day, so I know I met Terry and John as well. And it's cool to talk to those kind of guys. How involved are some of these folks still in this industry? I mean, I know that Ron Rannick is still always at Cable Tech. And I think that passion there is awesome. It's hard to let go, but, you know, how is that knowledge transfer and what is kind of the involvement of some of those pioneers?
So Ron is obviously very, very involved, and SET National and other standards bodies as well. I'm pretty excited. I got a chance to record a training video last week that'll drop next week with Ron on an article that he wrote in the Communications Technology magazine years and years ago about the relationship between temperature and attenuation. That was one of those, brain blowing moments for me. Not only the first time I read it, because it challenged some misconceptions that I had been taught. But then to have a chance to actually record a training video with the guy that wrote it, it was a pretty cool moment for me. So Ron is obviously very involved. I'm going to drag Terry out of his comfortable retirement here soon. That one's on the schedule. But there's a lot of other folks that are on my list to reach out to, the Wayne Halls, the Lamar Wests. The list is very, very long of folks that we intend to reach out to. Not just our chapter, but I think there's a greater initiative that I can't really talk about because it's not mine. It's not my idea, but it's a really cool one to leverage those legends and get them active in the society again. So you didn't hear that from me, but it's a work in progress.
Talking about, yeah, I mean, outside of like SETE, you said these experts, these skilled experts are retiring. You know, there's no repository of like information. It's only just passed down kind of on the job training or in individual companies, except for maybe SETE. So it seems like, you know, what you're doing, what SETE is doing, what maybe this new initiative is doing, is kind of compiling and gathering that information for the next generation. So it's not just that tribal knowledge just, doesn't slip away and disappear.
Yeah, you hit it. And tribal knowledge is a term that I use a lot because that's the way I learned, right? Before I got involved in the society was, the guys that were, 20, 30 year, tenured employees, on the job when I got hired, taught me the way they learned. And then, I in turn taught the other FNGs, what I learned. And, we continue to perpetuate. You can edit that last bit out, I think. Because Andy got it, I'm sure.
It's a legal term.
It's a term of endearment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we perpetuate a lot of myths that aren't true, because that's the way we've always done it, right? And I'm grateful to guys like Ron and other members of the society that actually taught me the truth. Because a lot of the stuff that I was taught was just wrong. So some of it you figure out by trial and error. But once that tribal knowledge is instituted and it's passed down to generations, it's hard to dispel it. So we have a huge opportunity with a younger workforce to get it right the first time. And I think that's a big opportunity and a big responsibility to make sure that they get it right the first time so that we don't continue to perpetuate, misperceptions or myths or tribal knowledge. So
you're still running into that day, years later, there are still some major misconceptions out there false information that's been passed down. You're still running into that today.
Oh, absolutely. Wow. Yeah. And I always ask the question, well, why do you do it that way? And if the answer is because that's the way we've always done it, 95% of the time it's wrong.
Yeah.
So I do have an anecdotal story that I tell about that. And my wife's not here, so I can tell it, is that when we first got married, every Sunday we had a pot roast for dinner. And so I would watch her, go to the refrigerator, take the roast out and, put it on the counter, cut the ends off of it, season it, put it in the pan and cook it. And I was like, honey, why do you cut the ends off the roast? And she says, well, because it cooks better, it makes better gravy. And because my mother did it that way. I said, oh, okay. So the next holiday, I was at my mother-in-law's house and she made a pot roast for dinner. And, I watched her take the roast out of the refrigerator and put it on the counter, cut the ends off of it, season it, put it in the pan. I said, well, why do you cut the ends off the roast? She said, well, because it cooks better, it makes better gravy. And my mother did it that way. Okay. So my grandmother-in-law, God rest her soul, Fran, she was a wonderful woman and an excellent cook. I watched her prepare a pot roast and I said, Grandma, I have to ask, why do you cut the ends off the roast? And she said, so it'll fit in the pan. Yeah. So, you know, two generations removed, they were doing the same thing for a different reason. And they didn't understand, you know, where the story came from. And so that's not true. Although Fran was a great cook and God rest her soul, the rest of it was made up. But to kind of illustrate the point that in a lot of cases, we do something because that's what was modeled for us. And we don't understand why it was done that way. We just continue to do it.
Mm-hmm. We need to know why.
Great story. And I'm going to steal that. That is fantastic.
It is a good story.
You're welcome to it.
Take a note right now.
Yeah, I had a boss when I was a project manager at Time Warner. I had a boss, and that was his biggest pet peeve. If you ever, because we were kind of starting a new process, and that man, if somebody ever, because there was a lot of people that they kind of had been around a long time that came over for this new sort of thing that was set up, and if anybody ever said, "Well, that's we've always done it that way," man, it would set him off, and for good reason. I mean, it's like. He kind of was implementing a little more of a move fast and break things kind of idea, you know, in a kind of an old school environment, I guess. You know, you think of an old 80s cable office with a bunch of sort of cable dogs with sort of a high energy, like, hey, we're going to try this. We're going to implement new things. We're going to move faster. We're going to do what's never been done before. I mean, it was cool, though. Like, I love seeing innovation like that. But and I think it's probably part of the stuff that's just a small part of the kind of different visionary ideas that have gotten the industry to where it is now in different forms and times over the years. As that's well, what I see
it has.
Again with some of these new ideas, like, I mean, where all this new technology seems really high technology, it's very, you know, physics, science, whatever, you know, like the ability to put this kind of data over full duplex and do that is just wild. But at the same time, when you talk to some of the people that are helping invent that stuff, they have that same sort of cowboy grit that built the industry. Like, I love kind of the combination of those, the ethos of modern and just get it done.
Yeah. I like go fast and break things. I've made a career out of it, I think. But, you know, the cool thing about coax, though, is, and Brady Volpe and I were talking about this, and he's another guy that I think is really invested in, you know, training the next generation of folks. So if you haven't checked out Brady Volpe's channel, I encourage you to do that. But, you know, he and I were talking about the technology can be overwhelming because it is changing so fast. And, you know, the way we're transmitting bits and the way we're modulating signals and, you know, different modulation types and all of the software and things on the ends and the virtualization of the CMTS and, you know, with remote PHY and moving that, you know, RF layer to the edge. The reality is, though, is that the system itself, this is why I love coax, is still the same, right? In a lot of instances, particularly in FDX, the coax is the same, the connectors are the same, the taps are the same, the way we measure RF power is the same, and the things that affect the quality of the signal is the same. You have to maintain the shielding integrity of your plant, you know, the optical link and the impedance of the system. Your amplifier alignment has to be precise. Your power supply networks have to be in good working condition, right? All of those things are the same generationally, whether we're working on 330 megahertz analog one-way systems or 1.2 gigahertz FDX. And I call those the five pillars, the five things that I just mentioned, because if you can do those things, like it's embarrassing because it took me 20 years to learn that like the same stuff that I was taught as a new technician working on a 330 megahertz, you know, 30 amp cascade, 30 volt power system are the same to repair a modern day 1 gigahertz digital network. So that's kind of the beauty of our network. And, you know, it is worth the squeeze, because the traditional fundamental maintenance practices that we've always used are still valid. The difference is, you know, the technology on either end of it, whether it be the cable modem or, you know, the VCMTS, but the piece in the middle hasn't changed all that much, which is good for me because, you know, I'm not that smart, so I can still do cable stuff.
You want to learn new stuff. It's that's for the young folk. I don't
know. Yeah, it's hard to teach this old dog new tricks. I am 3 years older and hopefully wiser since last time we talked. So, you know, to that end, we are also trying to train that workforce that already exists through our YouTube channel, which I didn't have, you know, the last time we talked. So last year we really doubled down, and I mentioned the Bush family again because John, who was in the industry for a long time with Behavi and Trilithic before that, has been a partner with our chapter in the training video production through a project that he started up. So, you know, I'm still very close to the Bush family. And, you know, we started building training videos for, you know, current technicians that maybe haven't been in the industry that long to try and understand things like, you know, why is amplifier setup important? What are NPR curves? What does MER mean? How do you use PNM tools? So I've had occasion to sit down and talk about the basics. I had a great conversation with Neil Tang from Antronix about passives. That video series is going to drop next, actually this month. We're going to start deploying that. The video I mentioned with Ron Rannick comes out next week. We just released two videos with John Downey from Cisco, formerly of Cisco, about frequency response and the evolution of DOCSIS. So, you know, there's a lot of opportunity to train not just the workforce that exists today, but, you know, the workforce of tomorrow by building an archive and a library of, you know, all of this technology and, you know, why it's still important today. So pretty excited about the YouTube channel too.
So where do I find this YouTube channel if I'm a young tech or coming into the industry? Give a shout out to the YouTube channel.
Yeah, well, it's under the Penn Ohio SCT chapter, so you can search Penn Ohio SCT and you'll find us. And you know, we've started to build playlists for, you know, pretty specific things about, you know, the fundamentals of RF and, you know, how electrons travel down the coaxial medium. Done a lot of work with Larry Walcott, you know, for training over the years at Comcast and SCT. So Larry's been a great partner. And also about, you know, the proactive network maintenance tools and how do you interpret different signals. We've recorded a bunch of material for that channel. So Penn Ohio SCT, look us up. And, you know, if you have requests for things that you'd like to see, we have a long list of content that we need to record. It's actually right here. It's always in front of me. So I'm always, you know, trying to create meaningful, relevant, you know, hopefully time resistant content for HFC folks. So,
and Ohio chapter is leading the way for SCTE chapters and training. That's for sure.
Well, we try, right? So the Penn Ohio chapter was a great chapter. Look, when I first got involved, I was still a technician, right? And there was a group of leaders, Roger Hughes, who is legendary in this industry, is still involved in our chapter. And, you know, Roger was a guy that helped me to learn and helped foster my career and, you know, get me more involved in the chapter and other folks at Armstrong over the years, the entire Hassler family. You know, Bob Stamm, we have a rich tradition and culture of leadership, in our chapter that I'm just trying to help protect and promote as part of our tribal knowledge of, you know, how to help train, develop, you know, younger technicians and give them opportunities in this industry that we're in. So, you know, all the credit goes to, you know, Roger and Bob and, you know, Alan and Chad and Ed and those guys that came before me and Roy and Zach. You know, we're just benefactors of that. So, you know, I think it's our turn to try and think of how to interact with today's modern technology and social media platforms and, you know, younger generations of techs, and to help, you know, transmit some of that, that tribal knowledge, whether it's through YouTube or our Instagram channel, or our in-person trainings or some of our educational partnerships. You know, we're just trying to pay it forward, because those folks that, you know, led our chapter and led the industry before us, you know, handed it to us. So we're just trying not to screw it up.
Are you seeing a eager consumption of the training and information, right? It was, oh God, millennials are lazy, they don't want to work. There's, oh, Gen Z's lazy, they don't work. You know, like, are you seeing the younger generation, the high school program you have, eventually the community college, young techs, are they eager to consume the training that you're putting together? Because it's relevant, especially if they're already in industry. They need it for their jobs. So you would think so, but are you seeing that eagerness?
Yeah, I think so. You know, we're still pretty early in it. We're still growing this thing and figuring it out as we go along. But if I know anything about humans, because I am one most of the time, is that, you know, we want to have things in it in a way that we can understand them, in a way that we want to consume them. And, you know, COVID taught me that I was part of the YouTube generation. I would have said no before COVID, that I'm too old for that. I want to read a book or, you know, talk to a human being. And then, you know, I couldn't leave my house for a year. So I think we all learned how to be self-sufficient and how to go find information and how to do things. And YouTube was a big part of that. And so that's why I've really became interested in using that type of medium, the short video, you know, very precise form factor content, to try and reach out to people that maybe, like me, finally realized that we are part of this video driven short film kind of learning model. And so that's why we really invested in it and doubled down on it and said, if we're going to invest in any medium to try and reach, you know, this generation, but also the next generation, it's in this format. So I'm making a pretty big bet.
No, and I think you're right on the money. So before I make my next thing, out of curiosity, how long on average would you say these videos are?
So it sort of depends, right? Because what I also know, my youngest daughter and I, we trade Instagram videos almost daily, right? Of things that we find interesting or entertaining. We're lifelong learners and we're always fascinated by different stuff. And those are always short. So we have to produce some short, less than a minute kind of content to capture people's attention and say, hey, we're here. We're sometimes interesting. And you know, say stupid things that may make you laugh. But there's something behind it, and that's really to, you know, try and hit Facebook and Instagram and the other social media platforms to drive traffic to our YouTube channel, where those videos are 5 to 10 minutes. We do put like full length content up there that's an hour or 2 hours about, you know, something really specific. But, you know, it's sort of hit or miss, because it depends on, you know, who's it's also about growth, trying to get more eyeballs on the content and say, you know, if this is meaningful to you in your role, you know, at least, you know, we're here. So next time you're up in the air and you have a question about, you know, in your Altec bucket truck about, you know, what is this ICFR thing, or why is my amplifier not performing the way that it should, or, you know, why do I have this frequency response? That maybe they'll know that, hey, there's a 5-minute video on this YouTube channel that explains this thing, right? So that's the bet that we're making, is if we put, you know, these 5 to 10 minute videos about very precise, very, you know, topical, technology driven, you know, CATV related things, that eventually people will say, hey, this is a resource that we can go to on our phone while I'm up in the basket, that I can watch, you know, at different times, whenever I want it, to answer this specific question. And if my buddy asks me, why does this thing do this? Well, I can just, you know, say, hey, go check out this video. Here you go.
Yeah. And that's great. And that's why I asked, right? Those targeted topics, short form courses. If you look at adult learning, a lot of studies have shown adults consume and retain information better if it's in those short doses rather than, you know, long form hour, 2 hour classes. There's always going to be some sort of space for those longer classes, but you know, like you said, the social media of Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok, if any of that has taught us anything, is that, hey, you know, let's consume this in shorter bits and we'll be able to retain it. We'll be able to draw more eyes, like you said, and that's just fantastic. And John, welcome back to the land of 1080p and not the land of see your face.
I don't know. Yeah, there's some major connectivity issues there, but I'm back and glad to hear it. I mean, I wanted to also say about the YouTube channel, like, it's just how many places do you turn where that's the way people are gathering their information now? And it's making DIYers learn how to do all kinds of things that you used to hire people to do. You know, it's just really changing all of society. Really, it's just the democratization of information, and you know, being able to leverage that in our industry is awesome. So yeah, that's amazing. And then also, you know, the kind of people you're getting to join you for these videos. Some
heavy hitters. And that's the society, right? I keep coming back to that. You know, I presented actually today at Comcast to some young engineers, and the society was a big topic of conversation, because without my engagement and involvement in the Penn Ohio chapter and the society at large, you know, I wouldn't have had an opportunity to work with and get to know some of the most genuinely caring, intelligent, kind, giving people. And I keep coming back to Ron, because, you know, as a young technician, I have a bookshelf full of magazine articles that he wrote. And I think I told you the stalker story last time we were together. But, you know, I get to work with guys like Ron now. And I actually saw a PAR come from SCT today where they're going to release some short technical monographs of very precise, specific definitions of technical things. So it's a redux of something that the society used to do. And I'm looking forward to working with Ron on creating the video content to accompany those technical monographs to add that content to the channel. But, you know, that there's an amazing willingness and openness among the society's members and leaders to share their wealth of information to anybody that wants it. All you have to do is ask and get involved, and they're happy to share their experience and their wisdom. And it's just remarkable. So it was easy, you know, having been involved in the SCT nationally and at the chapter level now for a handful of years, to reach out to some folks and say, hey, I've got this idea. Like, I don't know if it's going to work or not, but like, we want to do this thing. And they're like, yeah, whatever, how can I help? You know, and Walcott's like the first one. I was like, yeah, we'll record this and, you know, do what you want with it. And, you know, train technicians and, you know, everybody that I've mentioned it to has been all in, because they want to give back or pay forward and, you know, willingly volunteer their time and expertise. And that's just the beauty of this industry that we're in, is it's when you get to the core of it and you rip all the labels off all the shirts and say, you know, we're all technologists and we all want the same thing. And that's to be able to, you know, deliver experiences and services to customers in the most efficient way possible, and to, you know, develop our technical workforce in such a way that we can do that. It's just such a giving community. It's I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah. I mean, you see it everywhere you turn if you're in this industry. And that's what whenever I'm talking to groups of people during trainings in our SCTE chapter and trying to tell them about SCTE, if they're not familiar about it, I'm like, I feel like they don't believe me, because I'm saying, like, listen, you literally could. He's like, I don't know if you know who Ron Ranick is, but he invented Doxus, and you could email him right now and you'll get a response. Does that make any sense to you? You know, I mean, but it truly is like that, and always has been. And that's just such a beautiful thing to see.
Yeah. And that's why I thank guys like you, you know, both of you, for starting your channel to spread the message, to educate people, to create awareness around the opportunities, you know, that exist within the society and within the industry of, you know, how to get involved, how to get connected to people. And, you know, there's just hundreds and hundreds of stories of folks that have benefited from, you know, the membership and engagement in the society. And it's a very small investment with an immeasurable upside. I'm always trying to bring awareness to it, to get people, you know, to realize this job could be a career if that's what you want. And the education that goes along with being good at your career, is available to you. You just have to ask and know where to look. And, you know, so I'm always trying to promote the society and engagement at the chapter level and, you know, investing in your own technical education, because there's so many resources at your disposal if you know where to look.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I really love about this industry is something that I've also seen living in Austin. I have a lot of friends that work in the tech industry, lots of people that work in coding and software development. And that's a place where you don't necessarily have to have a college degree to get hired. It's really more about what do you know. And certainly there are exceptions in the cable industry, but it is a place where you can really go a long way based on your abilities and skills and not based on which degrees you have sometimes.
No, I wholeheartedly agree with you, because, you know, I realize how lucky I am to work in a Fortune 30 company. I think we are Comcast, NBC, Universal. As a farm kid from Ohio with no college education that tripped into the cable television business. Like I will tell anybody that will listen, I work in the headquarters of a Fortune 30 company as a distinguished engineer without a college degree. Like, that doesn't happen without SCT. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, and I, you know, I also use the line that my dad taught me. It was originally from Mark Twain: never let your schooling interfere with your education. You know, more of my education happened after I graduated from high school than did before about, you know, just life, if you're willing to pay attention and ask the right questions. And the society was, you know, a willing, complicit partner in, you know, my education on the business. And, so it's, I am the American dream. If I'm honest, I have to kind of pinch myself sometimes, and my boss and I and my colleagues all argue who has the best job in the world. And I'm pretty sure it's me. But they all argue it's them too. So I don't know who's right.
that's a great story and a testament to, well, what John was saying is, the training is out there, you know, don't have the need for the college degree. And like you said, Mike, the society is there to support you along the way and provide that training and that support and the group of, you know, like-minded and fellow people that care about the industry and care about, you know, telecom.
Yeah. So that's where the business leaders, I think, come in. And that's one that I think is part of my job is we have some really amazing, sharp people that don't have a degree or any experience necessarily in the cable television industry, but can do amazing things with software. And so it's really up to us to decide, like, how we apply that to, you know, benefit both our customers and our end users or technicians, to help manage that, because software is really the interface, right, between anyone and data. And so it's incumbent on anybody that's writing code for software to say, well, who is my audience? How can I give them the best information to make the best decision to go do their job? And, you know, and talking to the engineers today, that was one of the things that we focused on, is there's a difference between IQ and EQ. And you can be the smartest guy in the room, and if you're not solving a problem in a way that helps somebody, you know, better themselves or do their jobs more effectively or efficiently, they don't care, right? Mm-hmm. So nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. That's a quote from my dad that I've heard more than once in my life. About, you know, being the smartest guy in the room. And he also told me, if you're the smartest guy in the room, you're in the wrong room. So, that's where the, you know, the Rons and the Larrys and the Terrys and all those guys come in, because, you know, I want to be in that room. because I'm not the smartest guy in that room. And there's a subgroup within the network operations subcommittee working group PNM, working group 7 PNM. And I got to, you got to hear this list. So it's chaired by Larry Walcott. We have Dr. Jason Root from Cable Labs is in there. James Colsey, Dr. James Colsey from broadband, from Broadcom. The list is huge. So there's basically two of us that are field guys, me and Arnie from Canada, and this list of PhDs a mile long, and these are the smartest guys in the room. And that's the room that I want to be in every week. I look forward to that call.
Yeah,
it's just because they understand, you know, how the technology works, but they also want to know, you know, how can we best apply this so that it actually benefits other people's lives. And, you know, James Medlock and Brady Volp, and I got to look up the list because I don't want to leave anybody out. These are unbelievably smart people. Tofiq Fawad, Alexander Podorevsky, Alan Maharaj, Dennis Brown, Brady Volpe, Ron Ranick, Larry Walcott, Jason Roop, Tom Colsey. Like it is a who's who of rock stars, right? And I get to work with these guys every week through the society, and just absorb and help, you know, inform the direction of technology to make it useful. So, you know, those are the opportunities that exist within the society. If you get involved and engaged and, you know, join the standard subcommittees and, you know, get to just drink from this fountain of knowledge every week, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Really, I think you do have the best job in the industry. And also, yeah, I don't think there could be a better spokesperson or example of what the society and what the industry has on offer. So cool.
For sure.
Yeah.
Mike, yeah, definitely a testament to the power and I guess the purpose of SCTE, and definitely appreciate you joining us here on our bourbon, our next bourbon and broadband. My bourbon is empty, so I'm going to need to go fill it. But definitely appreciate your time today.
No, it's always a pleasure, guys. Again, you know, big fans from, you know, the time you guys launched your podcast to help, you know, this is another one of those areas where it's all about continuous learning and staying in touch with what's happening, you know, not just at the regulatory level, but, you know, at the local levels of the trends in the industry to help keep us all informed and aware, but also your platform to promote the society and, you know, to help people better themselves. So in an entertaining way. So I give you guys a lot of credit for taking the time and the energy to invest in other people and, you know, to create your content. So big fans, cheers to you. Thanks for having me. Always happy to talk about SCT with you lads.
Yeah. Thanks for joining, Mike, and we'll check out that YouTube channel. And we'll see you next time on Andy and John Talk Telecom.